Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take newsletter. You can find me on the web if you like to speculate, turnerstake.com. If you're on the hedging side of the business, a producer or farmer, and you want to see our research and analysis for pricing cash grain and marketing, you can take a look at turnerstakeag.com. You can also follow me on Turner's Take, where I talk about the markets. And yeah, let's get started today. So, the stock market's up. Let's talk macro. So since we last talked on this podcast, I think the big news is Trump has really come out and said, hey, you know what, we want to do tax reform, that there are things going on behind the scenes, you know, we're closer than what we thought. You know, when the market sold off last, after we had the big rally in the beginning of the year, we were selling off because they were stalling on tax reform, the things that, you know, Trump was trying to do something with health care, and that didn't work. That momentum, the market was worried, well, the momentum that he kind of, that capital, political capital he spent on health reform, which didn't go well, then neither would tax reform. And all the papers were saying, a lot of the news press was saying that it was kind of not going to happen this year. So now we're talking about, you know, maybe there will be tax reform and corporate tax reform. So that's got the markets going. Plus, if you look at the S&P earnings, in terms of like meeting or beating expectations, we are doing a lot better this quarter than we did last quarter, in a nutshell. So earnings better than they were 3 months ago. And we're going from a period of where they didn't think we'd have tax reform until we are. So that's driving the stock market right now. We'll see how long that goes, but I mean, it's about 11:40 as I'm recording this now from the trade desk, and the Dow's up over 200, even the S&P is up 13, NASDAQ's up 40, so you know, there's definitely some momentum to that market right now. I don't know when it'll end, but what's interesting here is if you look at the June E-mini S&P, if we break through 2,400, that would certainly be buy signals. I mean, we'd be breaking through the top from February. The NASDAQ is already breaking all-time highs. And, you know, the Dow, let's take a look at the Dow real quick. In June, again, we got a close above, 21,100 or somewhere around there. And we're about, 21,000, sorry, for the Dow, 21,100 and change. We're at about 20,934 right now on the futures. So very positive for the stock market. I think that has also hurt the dollar here. You know, the dollar has really come down. If you take a look at a chart of the dollar, we've been in a free fall here. We're really in a... If you take a look at a dollar back to January, where we were at 103, and that was really the height of the Fed and the tax cuts and Trump coming in, not the tax cuts, I'm sorry, the rate cuts and Trump coming in, and, you know, the Treasury, you know, the Fed reducing their exposure to Treasuries and winding that big position. And ever since then, we've really been on a downward slope. So if you take a look at the dollar, that is interesting because we are expecting rate cuts, which in theory would be good for the dollar. Yet we've seen, you know, to me, it's like, you know, are we losing, you know, the dollar is also kind of not the greatest investment in terms of, you know, would you rather invest in stocks? Would you rather invest in commodities? Would you rather have your money in bonds? If you don't have anything that's attractive, money goes into the dollar. But if we do have other risk assets that are attractive, money comes out of the dollar. So even though you can make a case that we have better economic growth, stock market's growing, there's some lot of positive things now coming on the horizon, money coming out of the dollar trade and into other asset classes. So that's been a real interesting development too, and especially for someone like myself that does, you know, works with a lot of people in the agriculture commodities, because a lower dollar certainly would help for our export demand. So I wouldn't mind continue seeing the dollar break here, and yeah, we're at about 98.62 in the dollar. I would love to see us go down to 94, 95 area. I think that'd be fantastic, unless, you know, for all of you who are long out there, I don't wish that, but for really for the farmers, and those in the, you know, the cattle industry and or livestock on a whole, and agriculture, that lower dollar really does help. Certainly on the export scene, we could really use to sell some wheat in this country, I'll tell you that much. So anyways, that's what we're looking at on the macro side. There are the elections in France. That has been a big story too. You know, there's two elections that go on. They do it interesting in France. They do it on Sundays. The thought being everyone can make the election, no one has to work. It's actually a pretty good idea. I don't know why we don't do that in the United States. But actually, no, we have all that early voting, right? So the argument is, like, you know, you should be able to get it either by doing the early voting or whatever. So I guess every country has their own different way. France does it on Sunday, try to get the most people at the polls as possible. So they had that election. I think there were five candidates. What was really interesting is no one on the mainstream side made the runoff. Basically, if no one gets 50%, they take the top two of all the candidates running. I think they had five or six. You take your top two, and then you have your last election, which is in a couple of weeks. The two candidates that got through were probably the two were considered not mainstream, according to the French press. So one was probably a little bit farther to the right than the middle, and probably one was a little bit farther to the left than the middle. That's what it seems like to me, or that's how the business press is reporting it. No expert on French politics. But what is interesting is if they go with the more liberal candidate, one more bent on, let's just call probably socialism, they'll be more willing to stick with the euro and the current policies. But if they go with someone more on the right, who would probably be more capitalistic and nationalistic, then there's concerns of, you know, what direction they're going to take them. Are they going to distance themselves from Europe and the euro? So that's pretty important. That is definitely something you want to keep an eye on. So in terms of a macro sense, those are the two things I'm really watching. What's going on in France and Europe? And the other thing would be is, you know, tax reform in the United States and, you know, the continued earnings that we're seeing from companies here in the S&P. So that's really going to set the theme and also that dollar. As we go forward, I want to talk about a few things. We've been talking about energy. I was saying last week how I really thought crude oil was going to roll over here to some extent, you know. And again, it's not like it's rolled over huge, but it did, you know, since the last podcast when we were looking at crude, we were around, you know, the June was about 53, and it was just starting to turn over, and I was saying how OPEC can't, you know, control supply like it used to. When prices get over 50, I mean, the shale guys in the United States and also a non-OPEC shale producing companies really can make a dollar at those prices above 50. And, you know, what did we see? We also saw the hedge funds are very long in crude. And we've gone from about 53 in June to about 49 now. So that's $4 lower since we were last talking about it last week. I was talking about selling futures, buying puts, selling call spreads. Not selling calls, selling call spreads. However you like to play it. My own newsletter, Turner's Take. If you subscribe to it or take a trial, you're a client here at Daniels. We were talking about the seasonal spread, August versus East, which at the time was trading around a 45-cent carry. Now we're at about 90 cents, 85 cents. So depending on where you got in, you're up about, you know, probably 30 to 50 cents on that, you know, on a spread on very reduced margins. I don't know. I think we're starting to find some support down here. So I think kind of the easy money is probably made in that kind of move. I mean, we certainly could go down another $10 in crude, but, you know, we're also going to now start hitting support levels, right? You know, when we turned over, if you look at that chart of June crude, and, you know, we basically went down from 53.52, you know, there's a little bit of a vacuum there. You know, there was no support for crude until you got into this 47, 48, 49 range, and we're here. Now, anyone who trades these markets, follow these markets, know how, you know, when you break out, how far you can go. I just don't think this is a breakout moment for crude. I think we're going to keep on consolidating. OPEC will probably make some noise About how they're going to do a new round of cuts or production control. You know, maybe they get Russia to be more vocal. Maybe there's some skirmishes in the Middle East. That always seems to be good for crude oil prices. I don't want to be cynical here, but, you know, let's, you know, it'd be naive not to think that could happen. And those things. So, I don't know, if we do break through maybe 47.5 in June, you know, maybe then we can go down to 44, 42, 43. Then my interest, again, might be in crude. But for the moment, if you're up a couple of dollars in crude here, or whatever it is you're trading, I would take it off. Just, you know, and it's not like I'm saying I think we're going to reverse, or I'm still bearish on it. It's just, you know, it's probably the prudent thing to do. If you trade multiple positions, then I'd at least take off half, and then maybe you can set a stop or something and run something tight to see if we can't go. But, you know, old adage, you know, bulls make money, bears make money, pigs get slaughtered. Don't be a pig on the crude here. So, I know we also talked about how we were bearish on some of the other energy products, but we picked crude. Crude was the one going forward. I think natural gas has room to run lower. Take a look at June natural gas. We've been making lower highs since December. We've had real support at 280. We're at about 315 now. It's a time of year for bear spreads, bear future spreads in natural gas seasonally. Also, we're in what's known as the shoulder months for energy. If anyone don't know what a shoulder month is natural gas, crude, a lot of energy products have their highest demand during the summer and the winter, because that's when energy is usually, you know, in high demand, whether it be cooling or heating, driving season, whatever it may be. That's the typical pattern. Now, the energy markets definitely price this in, because during the year, you can look at what's the price of December natural gas versus the price of, like, May natural gas. And December should be trading higher than the May, because the market's already pricing in to begin with that diesel will be higher than May, that, you know, for that contract month. But if you get a seasonably very cold winter, you can see the D's even go up higher against the June. If you get just mild temperature during the shoulder months, which is now, you can actually see those shoulder month contracts come down. And what a shoulder month is you're not in a high demand area. So like spring and fall. So March, April, May, getting into June. You know, July and August wouldn't be. That'd be more of a higher demand month. You get into September, October. That's more of a shoulder month. Soon starting to get a Nov and Dec. You get back into the winter demand months. But right now, we're in end of April in terms of the cash prices and into May and June for the futures. I still think we could see some pressure in natural gas. I don't see a whole lot of demand coming. You know, you've got the forecasts. They're pretty mild. Throughout the country, nothing too hot, nothing too cold. Wouldn't be surprised to see some more pressure in the natural gas. So that's our take right now on the energies. If you do follow me, I have written a little bit about the natural gas spreads, but really didn't participate in them because we liked the crude more. And now that we're getting out of those, we're going to take another look at it. I think the crude story might be done for a little while, but I think we could see maybe something in natural gas. So hopefully, if it does, I'll be writing about that in Turner's Take Market Alert. Which, if you want to follow, go to www.turnerstake.com. Alrighty, so let's switch on over to, let's go to the grain markets. I still like our wheat spread. I know I've been sitting this thing for a while. It's July Kansas City versus July Chicago. I still think, you know, we've been 4, 5, 6 cents under Kansas City being under July wheat. I really think we're going to have fine crops for both of them. I think that Kansas City eventually trades 5, 10, 15 cents over wheat just based on the protein differential. In the past, Kansas City's been trading underneath the Chicago wheat. That's because we didn't have enough deliverable quantities of the Chicago wheat at the exchange. I think we will now after this harvest. I expect that protein differential to come back in. We'll see. I don't think there's a whole lot of risk left in this thing. I mean, on the July wheat, I mean, if wheat just tanks, I think we're going to have good crops in both, and, you know, whatever, maybe Kansas City and Chicago trade, you know, within 5 cents of each other, 10 cents of each other. But if we do get that protein differential coming back, you know, hard red wheat in a normal year would trade between 20 or 30 cents over Chicago. This is definitely not a normal year. We've got a ton of wheat out there. I still think we could trade 10 over. So I'll keep on to that for a while. It's relatively a lower margin spread. The corn, I've been saying this for a while. We were in that July Dease corn spread. If something should heat up in the corn market, I'll revisit July versus Dease corn. But I don't see the point right now. We're probably just going to stall out. If we do get some serious planting delays, I will take a look at it again. But and maybe that we'll see a lot more fund money come in. But in the meantime, I think you might have a better deal with Dease corn. If we get Dease corn gets to $4, I will be talking to our farming clients about pricing some. We are going to have a lot of acres of corn this year. 90 million. I know it's not as much as last year. When you add on the 90 million we're expecting, you say 82 of that is probably harvested, because when you're trying to figure out how much... Here's a nice little pro tip for you out there. If someone says we're going to have 90 million acres of corn, you know, we typically only harvest 92% of that. You know, some is lost, some goes to prevent plant, you know, just from where we start out, and abandoned. So you just say, that's the, you know, the USDA uses this number too. You take that, you know, so that gives us about 82, 83 million acres. You times that by your trend line yield. That's what you figure out your production is. And, you know, for corn, we're going to probably replace everything we use up this year. So we'll probably end up with a little bit over 2 billion stocks. Nothing too bad. I mean, corn, mid to high threes, maybe low fours during the summer. That kind of sounds right now. Beans, if we have 90 million acres of soybeans and a trend line yield and just, you know, a regular moderate expectations for demand, we're going to be over 600 million bushels for new crop beans, in my estimation. The next time the USDA puts out what they think the new crop ending stocks are going to be isn't until the May WASDE, so we got a couple of weeks, but I've been running those numbers now, and I think it's going to be 600, and I think that could send soybeans down to $9. Unless we get some further weather issues and we get some delays and we hear about, you know, the Dakotas, maybe more and more farmers talking about doing prevent plant, even though they're way, way early to talk about that. But sometimes the market can get ahead of itself. Otherwise, it's not looking great. I know I've talked about in the past I get questions about, well, if you want to take a shot at being long soybeans, just because soybeans can go up $1 or $1.50 on issues, you see all the money flow coming in. You know, what's a good low-risk way to play that? I think the odds of beans really rallying that much are low, but if something... So it's a low percentage. It's probably a low percentage trade. But if something should happen with soybeans, probably not on the demand side, probably have to be the supply side, you'd probably want to take a look at July versus November soybean spread. Maybe you get into it around zero, risk 5 or 10 cents. The other way to do it is look at the November 17 versus November 18 spread. That's at 12.5 right now, over Nov 17 trading 12.5 over 18, Nov 18. I think we got down as low as zero on that spread, or maybe two over. We're at 12 over now, so 10 cents to the downside would be matching the year's lows. At one point earlier this year, we were trading 50 over. I think that's the kind of the way you would play soybeans. Otherwise, I think it's tough. I think I'd rather use a rally to sell it right now, especially if our ending stocks would be projected to be 600 million. And that's my calculation. You know, we'll see how close I am based on my own estimates when the WASDE comes out in about 3 weeks from now, but that's where I'm seeing it. I think corn's going to be right around there. Wouldn't be surprised to see beans continue to lose in a price ratio-wise to corn, too. I know that's come in. You know, that long two corn to short one soybean, that's a popular trade with a lot of spread traders, and I know that's come in and worked really well. You know, if we can get some kind of soybean rally where the price of beans kind of gains on corn for a little while, I'd probably write about that and look about getting into a price where maybe we can see that coming back in. Maybe after like a weather rally this summer, because if we still end up having about 2 billion bushels of corn and 600 million ending stocks for soybeans in the new crop, that spread's going to continue to come in later this year. So something to keep an eye on, something to talk about later. So that's where I stand right now with the grain markets. Again, $4 for Dease corn is still my cash target, or futures. I mean, the futures get to $4 in Dease corn. You know, that's when we'd be looking to make some cash sales on the farm. If we get up to 410, 420, I would be aggressive. I would be aggressive with making sales. So that's where we are on, you know, on the grains. Finally, we just want to talk about the meats. I've been talking a lot about them. We have cattle seems to have turned out. Cattle has been having a tough time. So cattle will typically put in a spring high somewhere around now. And June cattle is, probably did that. Guy made a run to 118, didn't quite do it. So it's backing off a little bit. The thing is, the cash prices are still very high. Now, those cash prices are April cash prices, and June futures are typically discounted to the April. But it's a big discount. And so that cash, those cash prices have to come down a little bit, or the futures still have to come up. So that's going to put a little bit of bid into the futures market. We've had some record open interest coming in, which onto the long side, that is fund money coming into to cattle, so they will be supportive of the market up here. The thing is, though, if everyone heads for the exits at once, we've seen what that can do. You know, you can have a limit down or day or two, you know, if the funds all of a sudden wanted to leave at once. So I don't think that's going to happen, but if it did, that would create quite a downdraft. Here's the interesting dynamics of cattle right now. Cash prices are high because we do have some tight supply issues going on and some pretty good demand going on too. So if you remember back into last fall, we had too much beef, too much cattle, and we really drove prices down big. And what happened was is the market actually did the right thing. It performed correctly. We had too much supply. Everyone brought their stuff to the market. They didn't like hold on to it, you know, and you know, and keep things down for a long time. Ranchers, farmers, what they got rid of the product, prices spiked down, they basically cleaned house, and then what that created is a little bit of a shortage. So now margins and prices are higher, and it's actually better for, sometimes it's better to take that quick big loss, let it go, rip that Band-Aid off, and then business conditions get better. You know, that's the argument sometimes about banking. Like, you know, instead of, you know, the whole idea between, you know, with banking sometimes, like, you know, if something fails, just let it fail. You deal with the pain in the short term, but, you know, in the, going forward, you kind of have a clean slate and things can build again. But if, you know, you carry bad loans for years on years, you never can get, like, you know, the economy or growth never really pick up again because you always have the dead weight of the prior crisis hanging over you. So cattle industry did the opposite. They basically just puked everything and really started fresh. What ended up happening is we then had a shortage, not a huge shortage, but some shortage of cattle. And, you know, now we've seen these higher prices, especially in the front months. Thing is that, so then what happens? We've got cheap feed, we've got high prices, we've got good margins. Cure for low prices is low prices, meaning we produce less. The cure for high prices is high prices, meaning the incentive is to produce more. And we've definitely been seeing on the cattle on feed reports these placements coming in. And there are cattle on, there's definitely cattle on feed. Now it might not be ready yet to come to market, but it's coming. That's why I like those bear spreads selling. I've been talking about selling August and then buying either October, December, or February. And that's just going to depend on your risk level and how much risk you want to take on and the margin requirements. But those are kind of long-term trades that we liked. If you have any specific questions about that, you can contact me directly. All my information's in the show notes. Or you can just really search Google Craig Turner Daniels or Turner's Take, and you'll find all my contact information on the web. And, you know, cattle now, I think, is going to start to turn over a little bit. We haven't seen the volume and the selling, and there's definitely going to be some support from the funds on this one. But if we continue to see all these placements on go through basically the feeding and then come out and ready to be marketed, I do think we're going to have, when we get to later in the spring, early in the summer, there's going to be a lot of cattle on there. So I'm not interested in trading. I mean, I don't mind being short the front month now, which is June. I do think we'll eventually break. For those of you who don't want to do that wild ride, which not everyone wants, you usually need a pretty big account and, you know, strong stomach to trade that cattle market sometimes. If you're looking for something a little bit more lower risk, you can sit in the account and not, you know, fret about it every day. I like those bear spreads in the deferred months, and that's the way I would play it. And then finally on the hogs, I think I've been saying this for a while. I think hogs are turning around. And we did today, actually. You know, we, in my newsletter, was saying how we were getting June when we got down to 68. You know, that's where we were back in October. And I put out an email about the bull spread. Again, I think it was, let's see, what was it? I think it was June versus Dece. Hold on a second. I'm going to put you on hold and check my positions. All right, sorry about that. That was June, August we were playing. We were buying June, selling August. I didn't think it was December. That would have carried a lot of risk that not everyone's comfortable with. When I talk about trades in my newsletter, I really do try to make it for as many people as possible. Those with either larger accounts or those who have more appetite for risk-reward. And I was talking to him on the phone. I probably would have suggested June versus December, but those that like a little bit more smaller and tidier trades, lower margin, easier to manage, might not have the best reward of all the options, but probably the easiest one to manage on the risk side, then I would look at June versus July or June versus August. And I was writing about June versus August. So when we were down about minus 2 or minus 9, minus 1.9, minus 1.85, I think now we're about a half a penny higher. And if you look at if you look at June hogs, we're definitely on the rebound here. And I just think it's time. Also, seasonally, you get a lot of demand in the spring for pork as we get into barbecue season. And the hog market just got hammered. June hogs went from 80 to 68 in, a couple of months? So I think that's why I liked it. That's why I was writing about it. And if we take a look at, June. I can't believe I don't have this up on my screen. Hold on a second. I am back yet. And if we look at June versus August now, we're at about minus 1.25. So I think we can go to minus 1 pretty easy. That was the old support, which is now resistance. So if we break through that, then we can go to 0 or 1, or maybe half a point over. We're at about minus 1.25 here. Again, we're not talking like huge ranges, but, take a look at June versus August August hogs. We've had an annual low of minus 2.1. We've had an annual high of plus 1.5. So that's a 3.5-point range for that spread. 3.5 points and hogs is a 1600 top to bottom move, right? If you sold it at the high or bought it at the bottom, that represents $1,600. And what I like to do is we're looking to make $1,200 on these moves as we trade in between these ranges. And that's a lot what I do, what I write about. And, if you're an online trader or broker assisted, looking for something managed, if you do a lot of, or maybe a hybrid, we have a lot of clients like that hybrid approach of where you have access to the online technology, but also the broker. Those are the kind of things that I like to do. But again, I was getting bullish on hogs at 68. Some guys just got long the futures. Other guys were selling put spreads. Some were buying calls. Some got in with me and, did it with me buying June and selling August. And that's how we kind of looked at it. So whatever, and some guys fade me. Say, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm going the other way. That's fine too. So that's what we're looking at. So that's going to be the podcast for today. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me. You can also check me out at turnerstake.com. And if you're a producer in the industry, whether it be for grains or livestock, you can go to turnerstakeag.com. So again, all my contact information is in the show notes, and I'll be talking to you Thursday.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation termination or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.